So starting with verse 1, repeat after me, so we're trying to learn these verses. Om Kataksha Kirana Chanta Naman Mohabdhiye Namaha. Kataksha Kirana Chanta Naman Mohabdhiye Namaha. Ananta Ananda Krishnaya Jagan Mangala Murtiye. Ananta Ananda Krishnaya Jagan Mangala Murtiye. You haven't found it yet.
So sorry, I was going with that.
Yeah, it's there too.
But this doesn't have the chant version.
No, no, this is what you want.
Yeah. Oh, here, in your book. Page 27. There you go. Okay, everybody
got it? Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Peter has too many papers.
Well, I just don't organize it. That's the problem.
We could have
them
in our hand.
Put them
in
your pocket.
Okay, Ron. I got it.
Okay, just put that stuff over there. Here we go.
Okay.
Everybody with me? Okay. So repeat after me. Start from verse 1. Kataksha Kirana Chanta Naman Mohabdhiye Namaha. Kataksha Kirana Chanta Naman Mohabdhiye Namaha. Ananta Ananda Krishnaya Jagan Mangala Murtiye. Anantananda Krishnaya Jagan Mangala Murtaye. Ahamasmi Sada Bhami Kadachin Nahamapriyaha. Ahamasmi Sada Bhami Kadachin Nahamapriyaha. Brahmaiva Hamatasiddham Sachidananda Lakshanam. Brahmaiva Hamatasiddham Sachidananda Lakshanam. Mayevo deti chidyoni jagad gantarva patanam. Mayevo deti chidyoni jagad gantarva patanam. Atohan nakatam brahma sarvagnam sarvakaranam. Atohan nakatam brahma sarvagnam sarvakaranam. Sarvagnam sarvakaranam.
Sarvajam
sarvakaranam. Nesvatef pratyabhijnanat niramshatvam nachanyataha. Nesvatef pratyabhijnanat niramshatvam nachanyataha. Nachashraya vinashanme vinashasyat anashrayat. Nachashraya vinashanme vinashasyat anashrayat. Nashosha posha vikleda chedas chinna baso mama. Nashosha posha vikleda chedas chinna baso mama. Satchai rapyani lagnyam vaha shastrai kimutakalpitaihi. Satchai rapyani lagnyam vaha shastrai kimutakalpitaihi. Abharupasya vishwasya bhanam vasa nidhirvina. Abharupasya vishwasya bhanam vasa nidhirvina. Kadachin navikalpeta bhachahantena sarvagaha. Kadachin navikalpeta bhachahantena sarvagaha.
Okay, now this is the one we're working on, so I'm going to just go over it again. And we'll chant it a couple of times and then do the informant. Okay? Number 7. So repeat after me. Nahi banat rate satvam.
Nahi banat rate satvam.
Narate bhanam chito chitaha.
Narate bhanam chito chitaha.
Chitsampedopi Nadyasat. I'll just go Chitto. Chitsampedopi.
Chitsampedopi
Nadyasat.
Nadyasat.
Rate tenaham advaya.
Rate tenaham advaya.
Let me go slowly with a sandhi, okay? Na hi.
Na hi.
Well, you don't have to repeat. Just write it down as you say. Na, na hi ba not. That da is a ta. And that, if I break the sandhi, so na hi ba not rite. Then sattvam, then you see where it says narate? That's na rite. Narate breaks into na rite. Then banam. Then chittaha achittaha. The chitto chittaha is chittaha achittaha. This is called sandhi rules. You, Chris, and you two might not have gotten it yet. Sat sambhedaha api na adhyasat rite tena aham advayaha.
Do this?
Yeah, mm-hmm. But we're going to do it again, mm-hmm. Because we didn't finish the last line. There's a lot in this verse, and I said I'd work on it again. But for them, I'm just going over it.
It's a little complicated.
So now let's try to chant it, and then I'll do the translate it, and then we'll work on it again. Nahi banat rate sattvam. Nahi bhana rate sattvam narate bhanam chito chitaha
narate bhanam chito chitaha
chitsambhedopi nadyasat
chitsambhedopi nadyasat
rate tena hamadvayaha
rate tena hamadvayaha
nahi bhana rate sattvam
Nahi bhana rite sattvam
narate bhanam chito chitaha
narate bhanam chito chitaha
chitsambhedo pinadhyasat
chitsambhedo pinadhyasat
rite tena hamadvayaha
rite tena hamadvayaha.
Okay, so let's go over that. The meaning of this. I think Rite is an indeclinable. I think it governs the fifth case. I don't know if it governs other cases or not. But here, na means not. He can just be indeed or because. Ba not, fifth case, Rite. Without bhana, without appearing, without consciousness, is really the idea. Without shining, without something shining, I'll explain this more later. So bhana means for something itself to shine. Like the sun, bhana, is shining, right? But this also, this table right now, is shining. But not of its own accord. But it's shining. It's presenting itself to you. It's known to you. It's so. Without this bhana, without its shining, means without it presenting itself to you, without being lit up, is another way of saying it, rite bhana. Sattvam, there is no existence. In other words, from your standpoint, unless something can appear to you, be manifest to you, it doesn't exist. There's no, you know, if there's no way of it, like we could say it like this, if there's no way for it to be known, for it to appear to you, it doesn't exist from as far as you're concerned, because there's no way for you to have any type of relationship with it, because it has no ability to appear before you. Okay? Do you understand what I mean? Like, for instance, all of the things that exist for you are things that are known. They're either known by somebody else, and so you gain an indirect knowledge, so they shine for you indirectly, or they're known directly by you. And so they have the, we can say even like this, if we take it from a standpoint outside of the individual, they have the capacity to be known. if something does not have the capacity to be known, it doesn't exist. It has no capacity to be known. You could say something like this, well, it doesn't have a capacity to be known because I don't have a big enough instrument. I don't have a powerful enough telescope or a powerful enough microscope. So then I could say, without those instruments, I can't know it. But with those instruments, it is. It has the capacity to be known. It has the capacity to shine, to be there, right? But what if something has no capacity to be known? See what I mean? Okay, now, from your standpoint, I think that this commentary, they take it like that. From your standpoint, in your experience, something which doesn't shine for you means it's not there, it's not something that you know anything about, right? Then that thing is non-existent from your standpoint. Not from Ishwara's standpoint, but from your standpoint. For it to be known, for it to exist for you, it has to be known in one way or another. If it's not known to you in any way at all, in terms of your scope, it doesn't exist. If we take it in terms of Ishwara's scope, in the total scope, something which is has by its very nature the capacity to be known. Okay.
Say that again.
From Ishwara's standpoint, Ishwara means the Lord, the collective standpoint, for something to exist means that it is in time, it exists in time and space. By the fact that it exists, it has the capacity to be known. Try to think of something that exists that can't be known. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. It seems to me like a very odd way to put this.
Well, because it isn't really.
It isn't, okay.
There are certain concepts here, like the word bonum, that we don't really say it this way in English. And so I have to try to make you understand how it's being said. You know, like, if something is, then by the mere fact that it is, it can be known. From its own standpoint, it can appear. It has. If it is, what if I say like this? It has. If it is, it has an appearance. Mm-hmm. It appears. By the very fact of its isness, it appears.
Yeah.
Right? Are you with me?
Yeah.
Okay, but we have to go on. Okay, this is just the beginning.
We're not finished yet.
Okay. But so, it says, you know, without this shining, or without, you can even say without consciousness, but we'll say right now, without its, without appearing, then there is no existence. Okay? So what if I say without the capacity to appear, by the very fact of its being, it has an appearance. Or I could say, by the very fact of its existence, it makes an appearance. Okay? And without that, without making an appearance, without appearing, then it doesn't have any existence. Because it hasn't appeared. If something hasn't appeared, it doesn't have an existence. So there is no existence without that appearance. Banat rate, without the appearance. But then he says this. But there is no appearance. Nabanam. There is no appearance. There is no banam of a chit, of something that is, does not have consciousness, right? Without consciousness. There is no shining of something which is inert, with something which itself is not consciousness, or something which is inert. There is no appearance or shining of it without consciousness. Okay. Do you see that? That rate chittaha. Chittaha is in the fifth case. Na banam achittaha. There is no banam. There is no shining. There is no appearance of something which is achit, that doesn't enjoy consciousness. Rate chittaha, without consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Now just think about it. Like, it's kind of very simple what they're saying. Like, we can use this as kind of an example. Say, all of these things in this room are, but it's in the middle of the night, there's no stars shining, and all of the electricity has gone out. So it is black in here, right? And so even though these things are, there's no appreciation of them because there's no light that allows them to be seen. Right? Because they themselves don't have any light. They require light in order to be seen, right? Whereas if the electricity was on, you know, and I turned this light on, I would say the light itself doesn't require light to illuminate. Light doesn't require light to illuminate. But all of these things that themselves don't have light as their very nature require light in order for them to appear. Their appearance without any consciousness can't take place. The appearance without light can't take place. They need light in order for them to appear. See that? And so here, now you say, there can't be any appearance of something which itself doesn't shine without that itself being inert without consciousness. So it's rate chitta. Without consciousness, there is no shining, right, of something which is itself inert. Why do they say that? It's because, just like I used the light example, consciousness itself, which is consciousness, doesn't require consciousness, another consciousness, to come in and light it up. Just like light, like this lamp. I don't need to turn on this lamp in order for this lamp to be lit up. Right? It doesn't require a second thing. It is light itself. It is the light. Right? So I don't need to bring in another light. Consciousness is like that too. For consciousness, you don't need to bring in another consciousness to light up the consciousness, to make the consciousness conscious. Right? So consciousness is consciousness, so it is its own bonum. It is its own appearance. It doesn't require something else to make it come into manifestation. Whereas everything that we say is achit, is other than consciousness, requires consciousness in order for it to be known.
I'm a little confused.
Go ahead.
Okay. Here's my confusion. When we use the word inert, which you've used a little bit, are we talking about inert objects like the rug, the table, or are we talking about the horn of a rabbit, something that just doesn't exist?
No.
Which one are we talking about?
We're not talking about the horn of the rabbit.
Okay.
So we're talking about all of these objects.
Okay.
In order for them to be known.
Yeah.
They require consciousness.
Okay. So, but then why did you say earlier that that table is shining?
Because I had to finish the sentence. I started with that. I started with it. This is shining, this is shining, this is shining.
Uh-huh.
Everything in this room is shining.
Okay.
You know, it is appearing. Mm-hmm. But without consciousness, so then I went to the example of light. But without light, it's not appearing. It's dependent. Its appearing is dependent on consciousness.
So I'm still confused.
Okay, well,
now I'm confused too.
Okay.
We're talking about inert objects that we light up with consciousness.
Yes, that's where we're starting.
But what about an animal then?
What about?
An animal is not a living animal is not inert.
Oh, okay. What I mean by... Let's go back into this. This verse is very, very terse, so which is fine. But let me just make it. An animal is no different than you or any other living being, right? So this physical body is enjoying consciousness, right? Because I illumine the body. Like, if I didn't have my five sense organs, this world would not be known, nor would this physical body be known.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So this body, even this body itself, for it to appear, it requires consciousness. You know, for it to shine, it's not shining on its own accord. Mm-hmm. It's shining because it is associated with consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So this body shines because I illuminate it. if I remove, just think of it like this, just in this room. This whole room is whatever's in this room that is being objectified through my sense of sight, for instance. Everything is shining. It is, it is, it is, it is. Every single thing is appearing. It's bonum. It's shining. You know? It is known, I can say, for bonum. Everything here is known. Right? But it's known because I have sense organs. Mm. Right? Without the sense organs, like, for instance, if I lose my sense of sight, then all of these things are, but from my standpoint, they're not shining. Right? So they require for, and for true for anybody else also, without consciousness shining upon them, they're not known. They're not known, they're not shining of their own accord.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
That's all I mean. So whether it's an animal body or a physical body or a plant body, those bodies are dependent upon consciousness in order for them to be known, to shine. The sense organs are the same way. The sense organs require the mind backing them in order for them to be known or to function. Like, for instance, if I have my eyes are open now and I'm seeing you, but I'm only seeing you, and all of you are manifest, shining to me, for me, because my eyes are focused on you and being blessed by my mind. If my mind is daydreaming, then these instruments, along with everything here, is not known. But if I'm daydreaming, what is, even though the all of this is here, my sense organs are here, if I'm daydreaming, then what becomes known is whatever, you know, is taking place in the mind. Right? And so that then that vritti, that thought becomes known. But the sense organs aren't known and the world isn't known because the consciousness is not shining on them from the front, with the use of the through the use of the sense organs. So now the consciousness is only illumining the mind, right? But now we say, does the mind also is an object of consciousness. The mind is objectified, right? So here the mind is known, but then this thought goes away, and next thought comes, that is known. That thought goes away, next thought comes, that is known. The only thought that is known is the thought that is present to consciousness. Otherwise, look at it like this. Here's this thought that I'm having right now. So it's hard to capture a thought, right? Because it's hard to stop time like that. But just slow it down and pretend. This thought right now that I'm having enjoys consciousness. It is known, right? Now, does the consciousness which it is enjoying belong to this thought? Does it belong to the thought? Because if it belongs to the thought, when this thought goes, it'll be off and running on its own. The little conscious thought will be, you know, it'll still enjoy consciousness. It'll still enjoy knownness because the consciousness belongs to it.
And we'll still know it, right?
Well, who will know it? Because, well, this is the thing. It will be all floating around knowing itself somewhere. Yeah. but what actually happens is the thoughts come and go, and whatever thought is present in any given moment of time, that thought shines and that thought is known. When that thought is gone, the next thought that comes, that thought shines, that thought is known. And so we will say that those thoughts, which are my thoughts, in other words, it's the thought flow which I illumine, right? Mm-hmm. Depend upon the luminary, the consciousness, for them to be illumined, because otherwise, as the thought flow keeps going, there'll be like a stream of luminosity, of knownness, you know, spinning out in endless time. But that's not the situation. The situation is that as the thought comes, as it's present, it is known. When it goes, it isn't known. Now, so the thoughts themselves depend upon consciousness for their shining. Now, let's go in one level. Does the consciousness that's illumining those thoughts depend upon anything for its shining?
No,
it doesn't depend upon another consciousness to light it up. It is consciousness. You know, so there's not, you don't have a consciousness behind consciousness behind consciousness behind consciousness. There'd be an infinite regress of consciousness illumining consciousness illumining consciousness, nor do we have any type of subject-object relationship with the conscious with consciousness. But consciousness itself, being consciousness, is the only thing, in fact, that is bonum, in without depending on anything else. Consciousness is self-evident. It's shining without requiring something to light it up. The examples that we, the example in the creation is in within duality is limited, but we can say all most things in the creation, like in this room, require light for them to be known. But the light doesn't require another light. I don't need, if I have this light, I don't need to bring in another light to light it up. So we'd say, this light is self-evident. It doesn't require a light to light it up. Whereas all these other things are not self-shining, self-evident. They require the light to light them up. You see what I mean? That's within the relative world. So now here, in this now, in reference to consciousness, because light is not consciousness. In fact, just think like this. If I'm blind, these lights can be on. It makes no difference to me. The light's on. But there's no sense organs for me that are able to use the consciousness that's illuminating the sense organs to light up this light, to make this light known. But I can use the example of light in reference to all of the objects in the world, right, to show the light is self-evident. The objects that it lights up are not self-evident. They require the light in order for them to shine. So now in this creation of our experience, subject-object experience, everything in this creation that can be objectified requires consciousness in order for it to be known. Without consciousness, there's no possibility of it being known. See, that it requires, that's the bottom line, it requires consciousness. The only thing that doesn't require consciousness for it to be shining, for it to appear, is consciousness itself. Right? Because consciousness itself doesn't require another luminary. So now to decide, well, what is consciousness itself? Consciousness itself is that which cannot be objectified, you know? Like, I can object, my sense organs enjoy consciousness, but I can objectify the sense organs, and I can also be without the use of the sense organs. The mind also can be objectified. The thoughts come and go, right? And so they also are not the consciousness, because I, the conscious being, am there as the thoughts come and go. Consciousness doesn't go anywhere. Nor is there anything behind consciousness to illumine consciousness. There's no subject-object relationship or, oh, look, I'm conscious of consciousness, as though there's a consciousness separate from the consciousness that is me. And so we say, but yet consciousness is known. It's not known, though, in a subject-object relationship. It's known because it is self-evident by being consciousness. So far, so good?
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at this first line again.
If the table was self-evident, would it always be known, like consciousness is always known? Or,
yeah.
So there'd always be table form.
Mm-hmm. There would always be table. Table would be consciousness, but...
It doesn't.
No, because you can objectify table. Okay. So now, nahi banat, without consciousness, there is no existence. Means that thing can't be for you, can't be known. Okay? But then there is no consciousness or bonum, say appearance, there is no shining of what is not consciousness, achittaha, without consciousness. Rate chittaha, without consciousness, what is not consciousness can't shine. But the only thing that can shine is consciousness itself. Without consciousness, the only thing that can shine is consciousness. Consciousness, there's no duality there. Consciousness is self-evident. Everything else requires consciousness for it to shine. Okay? Then, chit sambeda akina adhyasa rate. Now it says, But a samveda, a relationship with consciousness, any type of samveda, samveda here means a union, a relationship with consciousness, is not possible. There's no possibility to have a relationship with consciousness, because that's like having a relationship or union between light and dark. Where consciousness is, there is no inertness. You know, where there's consciousness, it's like where there's light, the darkness is gone. So where there's consciousness, there is no unconsciousness. There is no unconscious. So where is the relationship? How can you have a relationship between the consciousness, you know, and that which is devoid of consciousness? What is the relationship? It's like light and darkness, the relationship between light and darkness. So this is interesting. So what he says to finish that sentence, a samveda, a union, chit samveda, says even api, even a union, or api can mean and a union, a samveda, with consciousness. So we could say between consciousness and unconsciousness, and what is not consciousness. That samveda, that union, is not possible. Adhyasat rate. There is no such union without adhyasa, without superposition. Okay. And he says, tena aham advayaha, therefore I am non-dual. Okay. Tena, therefore, aham, I, andvayaha, I am non-dual. Okay. Because if there can't be, if consciousness and unconsciousness cannot coexist together, right, except through adhyasa, through superimposition, then if that's not possible, then without the adhyasa, then I must be non-dual, because there's no possibility of something being there along with consciousness. Okay. Okay. You ready?
That was good.
It's not even anywhere close to being over. We're definitely not done. We're not done.
You make it so simple in a way, you know? I make it complicated, but each time you explain it, it gets clearer and clearer.
Yeah, but there's some big jumps here.
I'm sure there are.
Yes, a big jump. So we're just going to keep sitting with this for a little while.
When it says union with consciousness, meaning union as in two things
coming together. Okay. That's right. Union is like, can the light ever reach the darkness? Light can never unite with darkness, because wherever the light is, there's only consciousness. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. And
go ahead.
And so there's no, in that way, there's no union, there's no merging, there's no connecting. Light can't connect with darkness, because wherever the light is, there's only consciousness.
But the table analogy, I can see the lit up table, and I can see light. They do, you know, darkness is easy to see, that light and dark can coexist.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can see the table, and light is kind of sort of separate.
Don't worry about the light. The light darkness is just a drishtanta illustration in and of itself. So just like I can say there can't be any, light can never unite with darkness, like that, consciousness can't ever have a relationship with unconscious, okay, or that which is not conscious. It's like wherever the consciousness is, the inertness is gone. There is no such thing as inertness. Except through adhyasa, we do see a union between the conscious and the unconscious. If we accept superimposition, like for instance, if I say this body is conscious, this body enjoys consciousness, it has consciousness. Consciousness and awareness, consciousness and what is inert, have united here in this body, in the mind. Consciousness and the mind have united, because I can say the mind is conscious. The mind is a conscious entity. The body, the mind, which is, from its own accord, inert because illumined, right? If we analyze it, the mind is actually illumined, or the body is actually illumined, but I say, this body is a conscious body. My sense organs are conscious, right? My sense organs are conscious. My mind is conscious. Now the question is, and we know that this physical body is of its own accord inert. It requires to be illumined, right? If this physical body isn't illumined, it is not known. Like, what about a dead body?
Mm-hmm.
Or what about a body that's not being witnessed through sense perception? Right? It's not shining. The body's not shining of its own accord. Just look at a dead body. Once the jiva has left the physical body, you don't even think of it as being a conscious entity. You just think of it as a dead body. And now this dead body, which from its own standpoint, even if you were to think that it had consciousness when it was alive, now it doesn't. Okay, so there's no question with a dead body. So now this dead body is something that now is known only through those who are looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what makes it shine. Consciousness is now coming from others' sense organs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what allows it to be known, the dead body. It's known through others, like my sense organs. I'm looking at the dead body. But now say the dead body is not a dead body. It's a live body. How is that live body known? It is known, similarly, through the sense organs of that live body. Right? Just take a live body like this body and eliminate your sense organs one by one. You eliminate your eyes. Now the body cannot be seen. You eliminate your ears. Now the body cannot be heard. Eliminate your sense of touch. Now the body can't be felt. Eliminate your sense of taste. Now the body can't be tasted. You eliminate all five sense organs, and your mind still is, but there is no body because there is no there are no sense organs to perceive it. See what I mean? So from your standpoint, where is there a body? Get rid of your sense organs. Where is there a body? It's not there. Because there's no consciousness shining on it. Okay? So far, so good? Now, you say that this body is conscious. Now the question is, has the body, which is objectifiable and from its own standpoint unconscious, right, unconscious because it's illumined and a dead body doesn't enjoy consciousness, what is the relationship between the consciousness which this body enjoys and the body? What's the relationship between consciousness and the body which allows you to say this is a conscious body? We say the only relationship that is there is one of adhyasa. Adhyasa means superimposition, where I take my mind, superimposes the nature of the conscious being upon the body which is objectified. Right? The body is objectified. It's known through the sense organs, blessed by the mind. So the body is actually an object. Okay? Now, this object, I say, I give the consciousness of my own being to this object. My mind does. I superimpose consciousness onto the body. And that's called adhyasa. And I superimpose the body onto consciousness, the consciousness that illumines it. We call this anyonya adhyasa, mutual superimposition, where the consciousness becomes the physical body, and so therefore, that's the one adhyasa. From the stand, it's the mind that's doing this adhyasa, the superimposition. So the mind says, I, the conscious being, am this physical body, and then I'm subject to birth and death and whatever the qualities of the physical body are, right? So the physical body gets superimposed onto consciousness, and consciousness gets superimposed onto the body. Right? And so then I'll say that consciousness is in the form of this body and subject to all of the goodness of the body, all the qualities of the body, right? And the body is a conscious existent being. Because consciousness is superimposed on the body, so the body becomes the existent conscious being, and the qualities of the body are superimposed upon consciousness, and so consciousness becomes whatever the nature of the body is. That's what we call adhyasa, superimposition. We say anyonya adhyasa because it's a mutual superimposition. The body is superimposed on consciousness, and consciousness is superimposed on the body. Anyonya means anya, anya, other, other. It means, so we translate that as mutual. The one is superimposed on the other.
And this seems to be an automatic process, a natural automatic process.
It's absolutely natural. It's beginningless ajnanam. It's beginningless ignorance. Because as long as, say, you're born as a little baby and just take it back to infinite birth, but even you just take this birth is enough, the mind by itself, right, is as though is illumined or has as though consciousness manifest in it, as opposed to like a rug, right? That's what we call sattva, you know, that which reflects consciousness, as though reflects. And so from the standpoint of the mind, it is never without consciousness. Whatever thought is there enjoys consciousness. Whatever emotion is there enjoys consciousness. So whatever vritti means thought modification, whatever thought modification is there, it enjoys consciousness. So why shouldn't the mind say, I am a conscious being?
Yeah.
Because there's no time when the mind, any vritti, any thought modification, doesn't enjoy consciousness. But when the Upanishad comes in, it makes you analyze the situation and say, well, let's look at this. You're saying that the consciousness which you are, like when you say, I am, I exist, I'm a conscious being, is dependent for its being on the mind, and the mind is dependent on the mind is given to consciousness, consciousness is given to the mind, so the mind can say, I'm the conscious being. However, when you look at analyze the situation, any thought that you have, and I'm including emotions, any vritti, any thought modification, is in fact illumined by consciousness because it is known. And it doesn't know you back. Like if you say, I'm aware of this thought, and the thought doesn't turn around and say, yeah, and I'm aware of you too. You know what I mean? We're both conscious beings. No, there's only one conscious being that illumines the mind, that illumines the thought, right? And that thought comes and goes, and consciousness doesn't. Right? The thought, consciousness remains. The thought is there. It's illumined. It is known. It goes. Next thought comes. It is illumined. It is known. But consciousness doesn't go anywhere. It remains as an absolutely necessary component, in a sense, I'm using tongue-in-cheek component, of the mind, but it's not dependent on the mind at all. Any given thought totally depends on consciousness for its knownness and its being. But the thought goes out of being, goes out of knownness, goes out of consciousness. And what remains? Conscious being. Right? So that this is what we call the superimposition that allows for this type of illusion, you know? But conscious being, in fact, is the stable, you know? Is the stable satyam. That's what we call conscious being is real. Why? Because it doesn't come and go. The mind is mithya. Why? Because it totally depends upon consciousness for its being and for its knownness, you know? But when it's gone, when the vritti is gone, then it's gone. So it's mithya. It's totally dependent upon consciousness for its being, but consciousness is satyam. It's not, it's real. It's not in the sense that it's not dependent upon upon the mind at all. It's the same with the body. The physical body enjoys consciousness really because of the subtle body which inhabits the physical body, but don't even worry about that for now. The physical body is known, right? It is. Right? But then the isness, the conscious being, which is, illumines this physical body, and really through the mind and the sense organs, this physical body is known. Right? The mind and the sensor, the consciousness, which is necessary for this physical body to be and to be known, isn't dependent on the body, but the body is dependent upon it. It's not dependent on the body because the body, the mind isn't even dependent on the consciousness, nor is the sense organs, nor is the physical body. The existence of the physical body is dependent upon the sense organs, which is dependent upon the mind, which is dependent on consciousness, which illumines it. Without that innermost for now, luminary, these things don't have any being at all. They don't have any existence at all. Even in your own subjective experience, they have no existence. It is, try to catch this one. In order for something to be real, it can't come into being and go out of being. Anything. Anything that is subject to change comes into being and goes out of being. Whatever the prior condition was of that situation is gone. Where did it go? Any prior condition, it's gone. Any future condition, not here yet. So now, you can say this thing, whatever it is when it's here. When it's here, it is, and it is known. Now this is the problem, though. Before it was here, it was not, and it was not known. And after it goes, it is not, and it is not known. And so that means any moment of experience is bordered by it's not being known, it's not non-existence. Right? So that means it only has existence in between these moments of non-existence. Its moment of existence is bordered by its non-existence, it's not being known. So we call that kind of a situation mithya, because nothing which is can come from non-existence. There's no such thing. The way we use non-existence means it's not there. So what is not there cannot produce something, because it's not there. And so what actually exists can't have a prior condition. It's impossible for it to have a prior condition. Because if it has a prior condition, that means there's a time when it was not. If there was a time when it was not, then what is non-existent then gives birth to existence, which is not possible. So now, if anything comes into being, the being that it enjoys, right, doesn't belong to itself. If it comes into being, the being that it's enjoying does not belong to itself. Because what actually exists can't come into being because it's prior conditioned to be non-existence. Right? So all of these things in the whole manifest creation, including the body, the mind, the sensors, all of them, the creation itself is subject to change, continual coming into being and going out of being. Right? While they're here, all of them enjoy knownness and beingness. But because everything in the creation has that prior and posterior condition of non-being, it is dependent on being itself, right, for its being. And being itself doesn't have a prior condition. If it doesn't have a prior condition, it can't be objectified. Because anything that is objectified is existing within time and space and subject-object relationship. So there is only one thing, in fact, that can't be objectified, and that's being itself, which is consciousness.
They're cheering us.
But did you say the being doesn't belong to the object, okay? But then we're also saying that there's no relationship between consciousness.
The being doesn't belong to the object.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But we have to go on, right?
Okay.
But the object must be nitya.
Yeah.
See, if the being doesn't belong to the object,
uh-huh,
by that fact alone, the object is nitya.
Yeah.
Right? Because the object, if being doesn't belong, isn't innate to the object,
yeah,
the object doesn't exist because it has no being. And so whatever being it has a dependent being, because here is the object. Here you are, we're all objects here. And we all are. But none of these objects in the entire universe, and the universe as a whole, because the whole universe is subject to continual change. None of the universe itself has been, but the whole universe is. Where does the isness come from? Where does the being come from? The being doesn't come from anything in the universe that is subject to change, because if it's subject to change, it's bordered by non-being. Mm. So the being which the universe enjoys is me, is consciousness itself.
How is that not a relationship?
Because if the being that it's enjoying is consciousness itself, it has no being of its own.
Oh, okay.
So the relationship is satya mitya. So take this example. We'll go back to our clay pot. The clay pot is the satya mitya example that we use over and over again. If you have a clay pot, the pot has no being other than the clay. You can't say that there is pot and clay, right? Because, but you can, there's clay and the clay is pot. So in fact, but there's not two, there's not, you can't take the clay out of the pot and have the pot still be there, right? If we have a clay pot, take the clay out of the pot, there's no pot. There really is no pot. You can say, you know, there's only clay. See this clay pot, really? There's only clay here, there's no pot. But the pot is useful, but it has no being separate from the pot, separate from the clay. So the only thing here really is clay, but there's a pot. That's why we call the pot, what is responsible for the pot, the name and form of the pot, is what we call maya. What's the etymology of maya? Ya ma iti. Maya, that which is not, that is maya. Because if I say, you know, this is maya, you know, there's something here. There's something here, right? It's not like saying the horn of a rabbit or the son of a barren woman. These are all examples of things that aren't there at all. That's not maya. We don't say that which is not, is maya, like the horn of a rabbit. We say that is tucham, that's totally non-existence, it's just a non-issue. These things are here, but they have no being of their own, just like the pot has no being apart from the clay. So now what if the pot says, I am clay? The pot says, I am clay. Well, I mean, that's true. The pot says, I am clay. But what if it says, what if that's all that it says? It needs to say something more for the satya mitya. Like, if I just say, I am a conscious being. Well, that is true. What if I say, I am conscious, I am consciousness, I'm a conscious existent being? So far, so good. But if I don't move on from there, then I just take this body, mind, sense organs to be responsible for consciousness and existence. And when the body, mind, sense organs dies, the body dies, then consciousness and existence goes away. Because the body dies, consciousness dies. Because the body goes out of existence, existence goes out of existence. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So now say the pot says, you know, I am the clay. But it can't say, but I, the clay, am free of the pot. It can't say, it'll say, the Ajnani, the ignorant pot, will say, I am the clay. And you know what? If somebody were to break me, or if I was to fall off this shelf, I, the clay, would be dead. I would be gone. Right? Because it takes the clay to be dependent upon the pot form. The existence of clay for it is dependent upon the pot form, where actually the clay is not dependent on pot form at all. If I took a wet lump of clay and made a pot and then changed it to a plate and then made it into a tumbler and then made it back into a lump, clay is clay. Nothing's happened to clay. Clay still remains just as clay, just clay. And so when the pot gets squashed into a plate, what will it say? The pot's not going to have an experience of dissolution. It'll say, oh, now I'm a plate. Now I'm a plate. I didn't know that. Yeah, that's what you say too, like when the physical body drops, or even when you go into a dream state, it's, oh, now I'm this. Right? Because, in fact, nothing at all has happened to you. That's the satyam. Right? And so this whole thing, the whole relationship we have with the creation, in fact, is one of satyam mitya, because there is no second being. Right? There's no second being. And all of this experience that we have, whether we take it from the individual experience, the body, mind, sense organs, which are coming into being and going out of being, the thoughts are coming into being, going out of being, the body is born, the body dies. You know, it's like the clay, the pot saying, I am the clay. This body, mind, sense organs is saying, I am the conscious being, you know. And if I'm killed, then the conscious being is killed. So that's what an Abhijnani says and feels. And they'll even say, oh, I hope there's some sort of soul that'll transmigrate. I don't know, but I hope so. That's what I believe, you know. But what the body, mind, sense organs complex has to be able to say is, I am the conscious being, just like the pot is the clay, but that I, the conscious being, am totally independent and free of the body, mind, sense organs. And you see that through all of these prakriyas, all of these teaching methodologies, where you differentiate in terms of your experience, subject-object experience, that which never changes or modifies in any way. Like, for instance, when you have a thought that comes, it's present and it goes. The thought, of course, goes through all kinds of modifications, including coming into being and going out of being, where you go through no modification at all. Or when we go through, have you do an imagination, like if you imagine a meadow. You remain, the imagination comes from you, is sustained by you, goes back into you, and then goes its merry way. Yeah, but nothing has happened to you before, during, and after. That's what we call viveka. That's the discrimination that needs to be done. You know, and so here, in this verse, there's some things that are left out here. So, and he says, there is no union between chit, between consciousness, and that which is objectified. A chit is that which can be objectified. So the conscious being is always the subject, and what can be objectified is the object. Why we say it is a chit? Because it's what is objectified isn't itself self-shining. You know, it is illumined. That's makes it mitya. It's illumined. It doesn't, you illumine it and then it illumines you. No. There's only one luminary there. Consciousness. So everything else that is other than that luminary, consciousness, is a chit. Right? The a negates it, is consciousness. And then you say, okay, what is the relationship between consciousness and what is illumined? There is no relationship. It's satya mitya. Because the sat itself is not objectifiable. So the consciousness enjoys the sat being. None of these things enjoy being for them to be a second thing, nor are they luminaries in their own right. Right? So they don't enjoy being, they don't enjoy consciousness, therefore they have no independent reality. And so any reality that you give them is one of adhyasa, brought about by superimposition. In fact, there is only one such here, like there's only one clay. For the pot, there's only one clay. There's only one such. There is no second thing here, you know, to give this reality to, except through superimposition, where I give my being to you. I give my being to the body. It's a superimposition. But if I were to analyze all of the objects that I can objectify, you can't find an object here. Everything that you call an object here is a conglomerate. It's infinitely divisible. It's just a name. Swamiji says names within names within names within names within names. Every name is made up of many smaller names, which are made up of smaller names. There is no end to that. And all of those things are also coming into being and going out of being. So there really is no achit. You only start out with this achit. But the achit is really maya. Like you can say, the pot is, you know, a clay. It's amrit. Mrit means clay. It's amrit. It's, you know, the pot is not clay. Well, if you say the pot is not clay, there's the pot, it's only clay. But if the pot is being illumined as Maya, as Mitya, you start out with that subject-object. But in the end, because what is objectified has no being, to say that it's acit is only a beginning position. It's an initial position. Right? Like if I can say, here, between this body and sense organs, and you and your body and sense organs, there's an initial position where I say, I am the conscious being illumining you. There's a subject-object relationship. But in the end, that subject-object relationship goes. Everything becomes an object first. This body, mind, sense organs becomes an object along with the rest of the creation. And then I realize this whole creation has no such chit of its own. If it has no independent such chit, then it is mitya. It has no being of its own. If it has no being, there's no second thing there. Therefore, I'm non-dual. That's how it has to resolve, because maya, mitya is not a second thing. Just like the pot is mitya, the clay is satya.
Could I ask something there? Or is that complete?
Let's say our prayer, and then you can ask something.
Okay.
Om Purnamidam Purnamidam Purnat Purnamagachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
Yeah. I'm just asking this for inquiry, not to be abstract, but in relationship to Sat and Maya, how does this universe fit into that? It's like 12 billion years old, and it's just incredibly vast.
Well, the universe is what is projected by Maya. And within the universe projection, there's time. We can clock that time. It can go back, you know, millions or hundreds of millions of years, however long it goes back, whatever science says.
Yeah, 12
but
billion.
Whatever it is. But that's all existing within the time-space creation. And when you say the universe is infinite, that infinite size is also within the time-space creation. Like, say if I ask you to imagine a universe, then whatever the size of that imagination is something that's measured from within the imagination, not from without. And the time that's ticking away is taking place from within the imagination, not from without. And it's same here. The size is from within the creation. The time is from within the creation. Just like if you go from waking state to dream state, in dream state, the time, you know, objectivity, distance, space, all of these things are within the imagination.
Well, But is consciousness big enough to hold all that? Or is that the right way of looking?
That's not the right way of looking at it, because time and space belong to the imagination or to the creation. There is no time and space for awareness. Awareness isn't big or small. It's non-dual.
Yeah.
You know, so the concepts of big or small, tall or short, left side, right side, anything that has to do with dimension, with change, with objectivity, that takes place within Maya. That's not has anything to do at all with consciousness itself. Consciousness doesn't have any borders. It doesn't have any size. You can only have size when you have duality. This is small, this is large, this is on the right side, this is on the left side. That all takes place within duality. Consciousness is non-dual. And why we say the reality itself is non-dual is because of the clay pot. This is only consciousness. The dimension and all of these things that we have, dimension, time, space, that exists within the imagination or within the time-space creation belong within the projection of Maya, within the manifestation of Maya. So now say, if I ask you to imagine a universe. This is your little piece of Maya. You have that Maya capacity, limited Maya capacity. I ask you to imagine a universe. Does consciousness spread out to become that universe? No. But whatever is imagined cannot be away from consciousness. Right? But consciousness doesn't become big or small. What if I ask you to imagine a tiny little atom? Does consciousness does shrink itself into the little atom or expand itself into the bigger imagination? It doesn't have anything to do with time or space.
So,
but there's nothing that's apart from it.
This presence of consciousness then has nothing to do with this creation or lack thereof?
Well, it has everything to do with it in that the satyamitya, the creation can't be away from it, but it's free of it. That's the satyamitya.
And that, that applies to this whole projection then?
It applies to absolutely everything. If it didn't apply to absolutely everything without exception, then there wouldn't be non-duality. Mm-hmm. If there was, then there would be something else that is its own little thing, right. Whatever that is. There's two of them. But for there to be two, there has to be two existent entities. If there's only one existent entity, then you can't say there's the one existent entity and a non-existent entity. Or there's one existent entity and then something in between and another existent entity. Well, what is that thing in between? Existent entity, non-existence, which is not there, and another existent entity. Well, the non-existence isn't there for there to be two existent entities.
Yeah.
Carol, I'm having a challenge with the difference between like consciousness and my own awareness of my existence. Like, I feel like I've existed for, you know, decades here on this earth. Mm-hmm. There is no such thing in my mind as before that. I feel like I'm always existing, and even though I have changed my sense of self-awareness or limited self-awareness and self-identity persists throughout time. How is that sort of self-identity different from consciousness?
The self, the truth of the self-identity is only the changeless consciousness. That's, you know, the Dakshinamurti mudra. This is the Ahankara. This is the I thought. This is the body, mind, sense organs. The Ajnani, until this is clear, takes the consciousness to belong here. Your sense of identity, self-identity belongs here is because of this. When you have knowledge, you realize that your sense of self-identity is this, is Brahman. That the self-identity... Well, let me say the self-evident experience of your own being that makes you you. Like when you say, I am me. Those are words, I am me. Okay? You don't need those words. Those words are pointing to your sense of self, mm-hmm. your self-evident being that you take to be you. Now, that is Brahman. That's the truth. The problem is that the mind takes your self that you take to be yourself, the mind, the self that the mind takes to be itself, is Brahman. There's no Brahman out here. That is Brahman. Mm. But what the mind doesn't realize, it thinks that it is responsible for yourself, for your being. And what it realizes is that, no, the mind itself feels, no, actually I'm illumined and I'm always changing. And I'm coming and going, and the me, the self that is me, never changes, never comes and goes. So the mind itself recognizes that the very self that is itself is free of it.
But does it still exist? Like once that awareness occurs that, you know, Brahma is me, does the mind still exist as the mind?
Yeah, as long as...
Or has it merged into the, like, it the drop into the ocean?
No, there's no drop into the ocean because, in fact, it already is merged. It's like there's no merger. See, the pot is already the clay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to... It can't become any more clay than it is. Yeah? And you can't become any more yourself than you are. It's already totally... Mm-hmm. It's a done deal. Completely done deal. But the problem is that the mind, even though it recognizes I am me, the mind says, mm-hmm. I am me. That is true. But what it doesn't realize is that the me that I am is free of it. Right? And that's its tremendous freedom once it realizes that, because What it means is that the me that you, the mind takes itself to be, that me is Brahman. The knowledge is in recognizing that the very me that is you, that you take yourself to be right now, that that very me, that very personal me that I don't want to lose, that I hope goes on forever, that very me is free. And it will, it does go on forever, for it, there's no time at all. That that's the viveka that has to take place.
So when that real, actual realization occurs, there would be this sensation of still being, knowing what the limited me is, while in the context of being the whole?
No, it would be, you know that the limited, remember the limited me, consciousness doesn't have size to be limited or big. Size, like the body-mind sense organs, is limited, and Ishwara is limitless in terms of size, right? Yeah. It's like, this is a part to the whole. But the me, the awareness that I am, isn't big or small. The very awareness that I am totally, completely, fully, right now, at this moment, uncovered and anything, is the very me that Ishwara is. Ishwara doesn't have a bigger me than you do. There's only one me, you know, because there's no time or space. And so what you recognize is that this very personal me that is me is the very me that is Ishwara. Self, the conscious being.
It's just hard to conceive that, because the mind, like if there wasn't a limited me, how could I be everything?
No. The in terms of the upadhi, like the body, mind, sense organs, is part of Ishwara, part of the whole manifest creation. The body, mind, sense organs has limited knowledge, limited place, limited life, always changing, right? Within Ishwara, which is limitless knowledge, okay? But what about consciousness? The me that the limited mind enjoys is the very me that Ishwara enjoys. From the standpoint of the me, there's not big or small or difference at all. The me that I am is the me that you are, is the me that Tibby is the me that... Tibby's my cat, is the me that me... It is the me that all beings are. There's only one me, you know? And so that doesn't have to do with size. You're not going to gain knowledge and then become a big me. You know? You gain knowledge and recognize that this me, the self that you are, that is the most dear to you, right? The me, that the very me that you are is the most dear to you, that me that you are is the me that Ishwara is the me that is the self of all beings. So I know you intimately because you are me from the standpoint of the conscious me, not the mind, where I have different minds, different sense organs, different bodies, and all of that. But I am you in terms of my own self, which is most dear to me, and I am Ishwara. That's why there's no union with God. It's not union with God. It's recognizing that the very one innermost being is Ishwara. The very conscious being that is the self of the whole is the self of me. And so in that way, your mind is never away from Bhagawan. From the standpoint of awareness, you are Ishwara. From the standpoint of this body, mind, sense organs, you are a part of Ishwara.
Yeah, that's the most I can hope to sort of feel with my limited brain, that I'm part of.
The body, mind, sense organs truly is part of. Mm-hmm. But the consciousness, which the body, mind, sense organs enjoys, that the very me, the innermost subject, the Atma, that very Atma, is Brahman. You have to not think of Brahman as being big. Because otherwise I'm a little Atma in this body, and Brahman is big.
There's another thing that I feel is interesting, is that even when the mind understands this and has this knowledge, it'll still, even thoroughly have the knowledge, it'll still say, I am the one who's Brahman.
Well, and that's true, but you have to realize it the other way around, because the self of your mind is Brahman. But so you have to be able to go both ways. You have to see that you are Brahman, and you are free of the body, mind, sense organs.
Even though the mind still claims, I'm the origin of consciousness.
Well, that's the problem. That's what has to change.
But But it can change in the sense of still having that notion, but knowing that it's free of it. The notion doesn't automatically just disappear.
It disappears with knowledge, as your knowledge becomes clear.
How much does it disappear?
Disappears a lot. I'm going to stop here.